Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and this week we're going to be talking about the process of healing injuries and pains. My guest is Dr. Barry Sears. He's a chiropractic physician in Astoria, also my lifetime partner. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm going to lay out a few scenarios of what we're talking about. You step off the curb and you twist your ankle or you jar your back. You reach into the back seat of the car and the thing you're trying to get is just too far. And you stretch and you stretch and you stretch and you hurt whatever, your neck, your upper back, your shoulder. Or somebody smacks into the back of your car and hurts your, name it, neck, back, jaw, whatever. So these are the kinds of things that we're talking about today. What is going on when those things happen? Oh, there's one other one, which is even less traumatic, but still causes a significant number of problems, which is someone bends over to get something and their back seizes up. So let's start with what happens right when those events occur. Your body does a ton of things.
Well, one of the major thing that goes on is, depending on the severity of the injury, you're going to essentially tear the connective tissue that holds you together. So if you pick the more severe injuries like car wrecks and things like that, those seem really clear. A person has, you know, gets hit at 5, 10, 15, 20 miles an hour. They wrench their neck and produce what's called a whiplash. Well, once you've done that, you've actually torn the connective tissue around the joint structures, as well as some of the muscle tissues, tendon tissues. And once you rip that tissue, it's going to immediately fill in with fluid. Similarly, like when you twist your ankle, if your ankle turns, you know, gets real puffy, if it's clear, it's just clear fluid. If you break blood vessels, then you'll have some discoloration. But once you do that, you've set off an event to where you've got this connective tissue trauma, swelling and release of certain chemicals.
Let's talk about those chemicals.
Well, the major chemical that's released is there's a chain of reaction in trauma, and one of the chemicals releases something known as prostaglandins. And this will increase the tissue swelling. And again, the thing that's typically used to counteract this, if you're going to use a medication, would be these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications like Advil or Motrin, things of that nature. And they inhibit prostaglandin formation. So if a person takes this and they feel less pain, it's actually because it's reduced the swelling. Mm-hmm. It's really not a painkiller.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go back. So we get prostaglandins, which make more swelling. And the purpose of the more swelling, is why do we do that?
Well, it's really sort of mostly a self-protective mechanism. You were trying to prevent further trauma or further injury, so you're going to guard it in some manner.
Uh-huh.
You're going to kind of try to protect it and possibly not use it. And again, it's contingent on how severe the injury is. If it's really a bad injury, you're going to have major debilitation and really can't function very well. In lesser cases, you can probably still get around. And it's just a gradation between how severe this might be. And obviously, with higher impact or trauma, you would expect a more severe injury.
Okay, so what other chemicals are released?
Well, there's another one that we're not sure about if it's released, but there was this idea that nerves, if you have nerve swelling and irritation, there's kinases that are in the tissue. I'm not quite sure if they're released.
But they're in the blood.
In the blood.
So when you break blood vessels, when you get bruising, well, even if you don't see bruising, if you have broken blood vessels as part of the injury, the kinases leak out, and then when they touch nerves, they're toxic to nerves, and that is another, a chemical source of pain when you have an injury.
And these are the sort of situations often where a person would have a radiating pain that's traveling away down the arms, down the legs, and we're, in this case, we're talking about some kind of a spinal injury to the neck or thorax or lumbar spine, and if you injure one of those, there's motor nerve roots that exit at each spinal segment that go someplace, and so if you have a nerve pain that radiates down your arm, down your leg, around your rib cage, then you've involved them major motor and sensory nerve root, and those are the ones you were talking about being affected by kinase.
So it might be that in the spine where you're having radiating pain, that you may still have a very simple injury, ligament damage, like you were talking about, with lots of swelling and prostaglandins, and it may go away pretty simply with appropriate treatment.
Well, there's an old rule of thumb that you're going to get better in proportion to the severity of the injury. So in lesser cases, they'll tend to heal up rather quickly, and a person can be in a lot of pain and discomfort, and yet they'll tend to recover within a short period of time. With more severe injury, there's going to be more of a repair process that needs to take place.
Now, another thing that comes to the site of an injury are white blood cells, phagocytes, cells that our body is going to munch, eat, clean up the debris from the injury.
And part of the repair process is to try to remove the offending material. And once, we mentioned this earlier, there's the serous fluid, which is this clear fluid that's sort of bathing the tissues. But if you tear connective tissue, which is made up of what's called collagen fibers, you're going to get this rent in the tissue, and then the clear fluid nearby is going to fill up the space, and that's where you're going to get that puffiness and tenderness. It's typically when this happens, if you try to touch it, I mean, if you've ever had a sore thumb, you know clearly, oh my God, I can hardly touch that joint, and it's going to set off this horrible pain, and then it seems like you can't help but bump it. Well, that's that swelling of this engorgement of the tissue, and mm-hmm. those things again can take a while to start recovering because mm-hmm. you've produced a lot of fluid. A lot of fluid is accumulated at the site of the trauma.
Okay, and so are there other causes of why it hurts besides their swelling and their kinases touching nerves? And
well, some of it gets the levels of complication. There's something known as discogenic pain. If you take, for example, an intervertebral disc, this thing that allows your spine to bend, twist, and turn, if you tear that disc, there can be pain of discogenic nature, which is slightly different than some other sorts. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few reflex arcs that will occur right at the site where you're going to also get reflexive pain that can be also involved. So it tends to get more and more complicated as you delve into it, but these are some different parts of what happens.
Okay, so
If you go back to the definition of these injuries, you're going to fall into these sort of categories. A sprain situation, by definition, a sprain is a joint injury. Joints are held together with connective tissues. They're encapsulated.
Ligaments
and synovial tissues that wrap around a joint structure. And so that's, by definition, you've torn that tissue. Another sort of injury that can also be associated would be strains, and strains would be damage to the muscular tissue or the tendons that connect the muscle to a structure to allow joints to move. So you can have sprains and strains or a combination of both. Mm-hmm. And again, other things on top of that, possibly.
A lot of times people say to us that they have hurt their muscles and they are holding on to their low back muscles. And what we find is that's actually not the case at all.
Well, muscles are movers, and muscles are highly vascularized, and they muscles themselves tend to heal rather readily. Mm-hmm. The difficult part would be the tendon connections, which are connective tissue, and the joint injuries. And if you destabilize a joint in the lumbar spine, your muscles are going to compensate by cramping up. And that's when people start, you know, reaching for muscle relaxants mm-hmm. and things of that nature. But it's not a muscular injury per se, even though you could hurt a muscle,
but it's not often
what we see in particular with spinal injuries. It's not an injury to the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
But there's right. obviously other ones. If you're lifting too much, you're going to kind of, you know, if you pick up anything and repeat the lift too many times or it's too heavy, you can actually feel pain in the muscle itself. And as you bend the muscle or contract it, you're going to feel this muscular pain. And that would be very different than at the end of the muscle connective to the joint structure. And muscles tend to repair faster because they're vascularized, and connective tissue is not full of blood vessels, and it right. doesn't.
And if you think of what a ligament looks like, it's white. It, you know, it doesn't have much blood supply. And the same thing on the other side with muscle. Bone is full of blood vessels, so actually a fracture generally heals faster than a sprain.
Well, also a bone will tend to heal completely and be stronger than it was before the injury. Joints don't necessarily fall into that category. No. They can become weakened and destabilized and subject to re-injury. Mm-hmm. You're not going to layer in extra material like you will at a fracture site where the bone really re-knits and creates new bone. Connective tissue can tend to scar or develop some laxity in the tissue to where the joint's not held together as well as it was before. Mm-hmm. And even those can fall into categories of either maybe too much restriction where it really tightens up, which and sometimes is actually better, or too much laxity where it's too loose and can
it's
be subject to
pretty unstable.
This is sort of the person who's, you know, in quotes, back goes out all the time. Something's unstable in there, and it mm-hmm. tends to give out repeatedly. Mm-hmm. The ones that kind of over-restrict, they don't tend to repeat, but they'll get stiff and inflexible.
Mm-hmm. The way I like to think of what happens with our joints after we've had an injury, when it's overly flexible, is that there's it's like a rubber band that's been overstretched. It doesn't return to its previous size, and now it's sloppy. And so now, when you move that joint around, you hear popping and noise because things aren't in the same relationship they were.
Well, another analogy would be like bungee cords. Bungee cords are full of a bunch of these little rubber fibers, and you know, bungee cord, as you when it's new and you pull on it, it has this nice elastic recoil and returns mm-hmm. to the original position. But as it wears and tears, you start getting rents in these cords, these bungee things, and those are like the collagen fibers. And if you then have a bungee cord that kind of goes, you know, wonky, it's kind of moves too much, you would have this thing where that connective right. tissue is torn and hasn't re-knitted like you would like it to, and you get this laxity situation, or people that turn their ankles all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now I want to talk about the scenarios that either set up a situation where a person will heal slower than you expect or faster than you expect. And I want to start with the slower. For instance, if you take certain medications, you're going to heal slower. And two of those are very commonly used medications, lisinopril, which is a blood pressure medication, and the statin medications, which are used to lower cholesterol. And this is seen in they stop stem cells from being produced. And so if you don't have new stem cells, you can't make new tissue. We make stem cells throughout our body, throughout our life. So those two things retard the ability to heal. So if you take one or both of those medications, know that if you sprain something, you're probably going to take longer to heal than someone who doesn't.
And those statins are sort of being used everywhere because everybody's afraid of high cholesterol levels. But even the statins themselves have their own risks, because just lowering your cholesterol isn't necessarily
making you healthier.
Not necessarily.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, you have a question for one of us, you can give a call at 503-325-0010. And you are listening to Your Health, and we'll be right back. we're back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Your Health. I'm with Dr. Barry Sears. He's a chiropractic physician in Astoria and my partner. And we're talking about the process of healing joint injuries. So when we left, we were talking about situations that would prolong the healing. Another one is if you are diabetic, so whether type 1 or type 2 diabetic, your tissues take longer to heal. So if you have a, something that's normally projected to take 6 weeks to heal, forget it. It's probably going to take you 2 months, or you may not heal if you're diabetic. Another one is if you're a smoker. Smokers take much longer to get better than non-smokers. So like when people are in a car wreck, we beg the smokers to quit smoking right away because they're going to get better so much faster than if they continue to smoke.
And one of the things that the nicotine inhibits is vitamin C. It destroys vitamin C. So a smoker would need to take more of that. Another thing of this nature of how the repair situation is, smokers or other people that have very fragile blood vessels and bruise very easily, it'd be an indication that they're really not healing up as they don't have as strong as tissues as they should have.
Right.
And the smoking itself is actually causing problems.
Right. And then
and the last one is statins.
No, not statins.
The different kinds of blood thinners that people have when they have different heart situations, like pacemakers or other heart issues, they're always put on these blood thinners. And it's not so much the blood thinners themselves, but they can't take other medications, other anti-inflammatories, mm-hmm. because it's contraindicated. Their blood's already thinned, and more anti-inflammatories would thin the blood more. So they say, don't take these things.
Right. Okay. So now the next side is, okay, what should a person do? And I want to emphasize that in all these scenarios, the same dynamics are happening in your joints and in your tissues. They are all swollen. They're all hurting. There's all some kind of tissue damage. So the first line of defense immediately is?
Immobilization is one of them, but the other one is ice. You know, it's like the old sports injuries. You have a sports injury, you know, it makes a lot of sense. You twist your ankle, you put it in a bucket of ice.
And yet, so many people will run and put a heating pad on their back.
Well, heat feels good, ice does not. You have to convince yourself to put your foot in ice. It's kind of easy to talk yourself to jump into a hot tub, but you don't want to bring more blood to the area.
Because there's already too much.
And it's amazing how many times we will see a person doing heat, it makes them way, way worse. And you say, okay, let's start using ice, and then often immediately it'll start improving.
Right.
The heat's nice in the sense that it's a great painkiller, so people reach for it. It makes you feel good, but the danger is it can lengthen or make it more difficult to recover. Ice is the right thing to use. In fact, we'll even see people still with whiplash injuries coming out of a hospital situation, and they're told to, you know, take painkillers and put heat on it, and not told to use ice or anti-inflammatories. And pretty much the rules would be that's what you should do, ice and anti-inflammatories.
Right. So when you put ice on, it is anti-inflammatory, it is pain-killing, and it accelerates the healing process. So let's talk about the kind of general rule of thumb is 15 to 20 minutes of ice on, no more than once an hour, could be used hourly. And
and to get penetration, you've got to have it on there a good 20 minutes to a half hour.
Right.
If the tissue is rather thick, like in the low back, you've got a lot of material to go through to get down to the joint structures. You've
right.
got an inch of muscle mm-hmm. or more mm-hmm. To get inside. So if it's very superficial, it won't have as much impact as if it has ability to penetrate deeper.
Right. And, you know, that goes for you have a cut, you have a bruise, you have a sprain, all those things. If you have a cut or a burn, if you put ice on any of those things, it will stop the bleeding, which will stop the bruising and slow the damage down.
Well, burns are one of the great examples. If you can get ice on it right away on a pretty bad burn, it won't blister, it won't fill with fluid, and it will recover much faster. If you let it blister and the skin comes off, the recovery time goes on way longer.
Right. So let's talk about The next. Okay, so now we are resting the place, we've put some ice on, the pain is starting to go down. Next.
The other thing to use would be some sort of an anti-inflammatory medication. These are these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. They're over the counter now. Ibuprofen and naproxen used to be prescription drugs only. Now they're over the counter, mm-hmm. and these are what are called prostaglandin inhibitors. They know how they will inhibit the formation of these things. And once again, these are anti-inflammatories, not painkillers. If they're easing your pain, it's because they're reducing the swelling. The other category that's used that's misapplied but necessary if you're in enough pain would be painkillers. Mm-hmm. Painkillers stop the pain, but they don't really do anything else.
Well, they actually don't stop the pain. They change your brain, and so you don't notice it as much.
It hits certain receptors, and it does change your perception of pain.
Right.
Or another one that's more practical in some ways is these topical analgesics you apply to your skin. You'll get a skin sensation. It can give you relief, but it is your skin that you're feeling mm-hmm. that sensation as sort of a distractant. One of the analogies you often give, you say, oh, my neck's killing me or my back's killing me. You say, well, if I smashed your toe with a hammer, you wouldn't even care about your back anymore because your toe would be so painful it would take over. So this distraction thing can be, if carefully used, it can be helpful.
Well, you know, actually, there's a published study that took a bunch of people with low back injuries and they divided them in two groups. In one group, they rubbed on an analgesic balm. The people were instructed to rub on an analgesic balm, and the other group did whatever. They had the same treatments. The people who rubbed the stuff on got better faster than the people who didn't.
Well, I think there's something also about a tactile stimulation of actually rubbing over an area.
Right. The rubbing.
In some ways, you might have been better because you were rubbing on it and rubbing in an ointment or something else. And it's certainly not a bad idea if you have an injury. You know, somebody massaging it or rubbing on it's going to be of some help.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt.
Right. Okay, so one of the things that people are confused about is how long should I keep putting ice on? And they somehow, in the wisdom of the country, people think after 2 days they should do alternating hot and cold, or they should switch to something else.
And there's a lot of just sort of the mythology that's out there, say reaching for heat or switching back and forth, but you should keep applying ice as long as they're swelling.
Right.
You want to try to, well, what's another great analogy is you look at these sports players, LeBron James, these other football guys, or these quarterbacks, and you watch after the game, what do? They put these guys in ice, and the reason they're wrapping their knees or elbows or something or shoulders in ice is they're trying to prevent the swelling from getting started. So it's that thing, the quicker you could stop the swelling or retard the swelling, the faster your recovery. So these guys, when they're done with the game, they ice their knees so it won't swell up.
Mm-hmm.
Or they put them in ice jacuzzis, and they're really trying to prevent this from being an issue, because once the swelling's got itself started, it can be more difficult to stop.
And, you know, I think that a reason to emulate what sports professionals do is because they only do what is the most effective, because they're paid for their bodies to work.
Well, they've got a lot of money invested, so they do invest money in those guys. They'll do a lot of therapies on them, a lot of other things that are beneficial outside of our discussion here, but a lot of therapies you can apply, they're going to use all the time.
Right.
Because they're like racehorses. They got them to be racing. If they're not, if they're not playing, they're not making money.
That's it.
And, but it is a good analogy.
And you will never see them putting heat on anything.
They don't want to do that. It's not a good plan.
Right. And so that's not good for you either with whatever you have. And that pretty goes through the whole injury.
And the other thing you're trying to do, again, with those things is you do want to try to, you know, regain the mobility. So they're going to work on trying to reestablish normal range of motion as quickly as possible.
So the laying on the couch for a week with the back injury is not indicated.
Well, some careful mobility exercises are always indicated. You just, again, depending on how unstable the joint is, you maybe need to be very careful with it. And just work on the range you can work within, and then try to increase it as more time goes by.
And generally, if we can get people walking as soon as possible, just walking will help them get better faster.
Well, the hard part, again, with low back injuries is a person may have very difficult time getting up and getting down, that transition. Once they're up, they're usually better.
Right, but then if we can get them to stay up for a while, then that will usually help. the healing accelerate, as opposed to laying on the couch. You don't get better if you don't move it.
You want to try to work on the kind of circulation you can initiate in all these structures. Movement is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how much you have to, you know, gauge as necessary.
Well, right. If it starts to hurt worse, then you know that it's time to take a rest and put more ice on.
That's generally an instability factor again. Necks and low backs are very prone to that. The thorax isn't so much because it's braced by the ribs. But when the neck or low back is injured, it can be very unstable and just can't support itself very well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you take a disc and hurt that, then you'll have even worse issues of supporting against gravity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the major thing, let's go into a little bit about the medications. You know, why don't we talk about that for a second? You know, there's nothing wrong with pain medications when needed. We usually recommend people not to take them during the daytime, but more at the night to sleep.
So they sleep, right. If the pain is like waking you up, or if you can't go to sleep because you have too much pain, the front line would be to take anti-inflammatories. And so a lot of times people will say, well, I took one ibuprofen and it didn't do anything. I say, well, you have a big pain. You probably need more, two or three.
Well, another thing about dosing is the issue is these two of the common ones, ibuprofen and naproxen. Naproxen has about a 12-hour duration and ibuprofen, roughly.
They say that it does. I haven't noticed that. But nonetheless,
it's sort of, if a person just takes like a 4-hour medication once a day, it's not going to last them through the entire day. So sometimes the dosing needs to be increased a bit to make sure there's something in their system that's reacting. Because once it's not there, nothing's happening.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that people do is they get in the habit of taking those things every day, and they aren't designed for long-term use. And there are problems associated with long-term use of any anti-inflammatory. So when your pain goes away, you should stop. And if your pain doesn't go away, you need to get some help.
It's something to be careful about. And even with the pain medications, narcotics and such obviously have their own risks. And people get to be where they like this stuff for other reasons.
They want to get high.
Mm-hmm, it can
happen. Right.
And taking them through the day is a bit dangerous in that sense too, because it's going to be masking your sensations and you run the risk of hurting yourself worse because you really don't necessarily feel it.
Well, and you know, when people say, well, I've hurt my back, I've hurt my neck, I've hurt my shoulder, should I go to work? And a lot of times the activity, not really strenuous, but certain level of daily activity is better than sitting home. So we recommend that people do go to work instead of that. Take 2 weeks off from work and sit on your butt and then we'll see how you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, another component of things that help people get better faster is chiropractic care.
Well, it's all this nature of trying to rehabilitate an injury, and there's certain things you can do that will help, the different sorts of therapies, mobilization therapies, things of that nature, just trying to help the condition recover faster.
Absolutely. Well, this has been fun. I hope this has given you some insight. Have a great week.